We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 2:43. Michael Moore's new film, Capitalism, A Love Story, seeks to expose the root causes of the economic meltdown and asks the question, what price has America paid for its love affair with capitalism? Recently, Moore talked with the host of Media Matters, Bob McChesney, about the film and about critics who claim that his past films, including Sicko, have played loose with the facts.
One of the things that's striking about all your films, and this one I think is no different, is that you cover stories that our news media ought to be covering. And it strikes me offhand that this current film, Capitalism, a Love Story, that's even more true, that this is a story that is in a lot of ways about a media system that failed us.
Oh, I think that's very true. And the people that have seen the movie already, one of the main comments I get from people after the movie is, how come they didn't show us that on the nightly news?
Mm-hmm.
They must have had that. And I said, oh, yeah, no, they did have it because I found it in their archives. There's one particular scene of Don Regan, who was Ronald Reagan's chief of staff, essentially not knowing his microphone was on, telling Reagan what to do. And you can see very clearly who's in charge. And not many people, you know, it wasn't really pointed out much at the time, just where Don Regan came from. People listening may not even remember, but
mm-hmm.
he was the chairman of Merrill Lynch. At that time, was the largest investment firm there in Wall Street. And it was really the beginnings of direct involvement of Wall Street bankers in the White House running the show. And that has continued now through the last number of administrations, both Democratic and Republican. And it's at a point now where their purpose of being there, their purpose of essentially running the economy, is to protect the wealthiest 1% who currently have more financial wealth in this country than the bottom 95% combined. That's where we're at right now.
You know, Michael Moore, one of the striking things about all the media you've been doing for this movie, for Capitalism, a Love Story, and the movie itself, is that you boldly say it's time to get rid of capitalism, that it has failed us, that it's no longer a productive system. We haven't heard someone say something like this for at least a generation in the United States. Do you think the time is right for this discussion?
Oh, I can see that it's right. I mean, here I am. I'm saying it on, you know, on Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it on Good Morning America, and I'm the response. You know, I think it's because, well, first of all, I guess we have Joe the Plumber to thank for this. The words capitalism and socialism really haven't been part of the public discourse for some time. You just, in normal, polite conversation, you just never heard the words.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barack Obama's campaigning on a suburban Toledo street, and there's this guy, Joe the Plumber. And Barack Obama says to him, you know, I think we need to spread the wealth around a little bit. And that just blew it open. They started calling him a socialist. A lot of young people had never really heard that term before, and they started thinking, well, what's that all about?
Mm-hmm.
You do a little investigation, and you hear, well, it's really, you know, it's kind of about making sure everybody is, you know, gets a fair slice of the pie. And, you know, to someone who hasn't been, especially a young person who hasn't been, you know, had to go through the Cold War era and all the Red Scare and everything, that doesn't sound like such a bad thing to them. And then, of course, a month after Joe the Plumber, the crash happened. So then President Bush starts making all these speeches defending capitalism. And again, you'd never heard a president of the United States say, my fellow Americans, today's topic is capitalism. You know, they never even use the word. You know, they talk about free enterprise, free market, and all that, but you never really, that word wasn't used very much. So in the last year, permission was given, I guess, to use these words. And I was already making the film when the crash happened, and I thought, well, this is actually good. This is bad for a lot of people in terms of the crash, but it's going to allow us now to walk through a door that has been shut for a long time, and that's to question the very system itself. And while I was making the film, I thought, well, you know, people are really going to get into this long before the film comes out. And I have to say that here we are more than a year after the crash, and I don't know about you, but I mean, I read a lot of op-ed pages, and I watch the cable talk shows, and they've dissected this bailout and the crash and come at it from every different angle and every different thing about it. I've never heard anybody allowed on TV or on the op-ed pages just state what I think is the obvious and just go right to the core of the problem, that maybe what's wrong here is capitalism itself. Why isn't that part of the discussion?
I know you don't have a lot of time. I want to go back to the media for a second. We had Wendell Potter, the Cigna Insurance sort of former executive, has come out as a main advocate of healthcare reform in the United States. And one of his last jobs at Cigna was shooting down your last film, Sicko. And he said, you know, that he watched the film and they checked it, and it checked out completely. It was completely factually accurate. You nailed the story perfectly in Sicko. And that was one of the reasons he left that job and went to the other side when he realized what he was doing. And what's striking to me is when you're on these shows with Wolf Blitzer or all these mainstream media, and they question you like you're pulling it out of the air.
I spent so much time. I have such a great research staff. I have probably upwards of a dozen people, researchers, lawyers, fact-checkers. In the past, I've hired former fact-checkers from the New Yorker magazine who are known for, you know, their diligence. I'm very, very not just careful, but I want people to hear the argument I'm going to make. I need them to know that the facts are always, always correct. And yet I get put through a ringer, as you mentioned. But hearing Wendell Potter's story when he first went on Bill Moyers a couple months ago to reveal this, and I had never met the guy. But apparently he had met me, because he and the other health insurance people, they all, the different companies, got together to figure out how to smear me and Sicko, and he was assigned to go to the premiere of it in Michigan, in the town where I live, and watch the film. And as you said, as he's watching it, he's seeing that, oh my God, this is all true. And he brought his 14-year-old son with him, and he tells the story of how at the end of the movie, after his son has just watched essentially what his dad does for a living, he gets up out of his seat and runs to me and wants my autograph, wants to get a picture with me. And he's watching his son, Michael Moore, as his hero, and he's crushed by this. And it really was his St. Paul moment. He was knocked off his horse, essentially, on the road to Damascus. And from that point on, I think, you know, he decided that he could no longer live life like that. And the documents that he's provided, Bob, that have shown not only how the health insurance industry concocts all these lies about universal health care and about how they do it in other countries.
Filmmaker Michael Moore, whose new film Capitalism, A Love Story, premiered nationwide over the weekend. He spoke with Bob McChesney, and you can hear the whole interview as part of the next edition of McChesney's Media Matters program. That's Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock on AM 580. Tax credits for making your home more energy efficient got a lot of early buzz. The promise of up to $1,500 back to insulate or add new windows or efficient furnaces led to a flurry of advertising. Tamara Keith of the Environment Report looks into what might be stopping people from taking advantage of those tax credits.
My husband and I recently bought an older house that could no doubt use some weatherizing. So I called up Ruvane Walder at EcoBico.
Hello.
Hello. He's a home energy auditor. He identifies ways to make a home more efficient.
I joke around. I consider myself an energy efficiency social worker.
And he's been getting a lot of calls lately from people like me looking to take advantage of the tax credits.
Let's look around the house, and you can point out some things that are of concern to you. And
Walder has all these cool tools, like an infrared camera that can see where the insulation isn't doing its job. He finds plenty of trouble spots, including one in the attic.
And if you just put your hand right in this little pocket right here, you can feel nice, cool air.
That's not supposed to happen.
I'll be honest with you. When I find these kind of things, it makes my day. Because we get to fix them.
Well, not all the time. Walder says only about a third of the homeowners he works with actually follow through on his recommendations.
I have talked to numerous homeowners, and their primary reason for not doing it is money.
He says the tax credits are a great shot in the arm, but for many people, it's just not enough. Part of the problem is, for simple weatherizing, insulation, weather stripping, windows, the tax credits apply to 30% of the cost of materials, not the labor. And the labor is actually the most expensive part.
Our economy is just so slow right now that people are just hesitant to really spend any amount of money, because regardless of the incentive, they're still going to have to spend a lot of money to make the improvement. It's not going to cover a significant portion of the cost.
At this point, federal officials don't know how many people have been inspired by the stimulus package to do work on their homes. They won't know until everyone files their taxes in April.
It's definitely driving additional business.
Matt Golden is president of Efficiency First. It's the National Association for the Home Performance Retrofitting Industry. But he isn't totally sold on the way the stimulus package is distributing the tax credits.
The biggest incentives are for the most expensive, fanciest equipment. And as you move towards the more cost-effective stuff, we get much smaller incremental incentives.
So there's big money for solar panels and geothermal heating systems. And if you want to put in a tankless hot water heater or a super efficient furnace, here labor costs can be counted towards tax credits. Golden says the smallest credits go to insulation and other simple steps.
It's actually kind of an impediment to the types of retrofitting projects that have the biggest return on investment, bang for the buck, and create the most jobs.
In my house, Walder estimates we need almost $6,000 worth of work. But because not all of it qualifies, I'll only get $600 of it back from the government. And we won't see the money until tax season. I'll admit, it's a lot more money with a lot less of a tax benefit than I was expecting. And that's probably what's giving some homeowners pause. For the Environment Report, I'm Tamara Keith.
Well, the biggest movie this weekend was Zombieland. It took in about $25 million at the box office. Drew Barrymore's directorial debut called Whip It made a fraction of that, but the film was killer with one demographic, roller derby fans. The movie follows Ellen Page as she becomes a member of an Austin, Texas team, the Hurl Scouts, and that brought real roller derby teens out in force, so NPR's Zoe Chase caught up with the Mason-Dixon Roller Vixens at the theater and has this report.
Robin Wiegand and Amanda Kerstetter are accosting people in line on their way to see Whip It at the Valley Mill Mall in Hagerstown, Maryland.
Hey guys, do you like chicks in underwear and fishnets? You should come see us.
Sure.
Yeah.
They're passing out flyers, hoping the movie drums up local interest in their team. Amanda's in a tutu. Robin's in rainbow tights. They're explaining roller derby to a group of guys who have never heard of it. They inform the guys that roller derby's all ladies.
Rolling around beating each other up. It's good entertainment.
Players race around a track on roller skates and occasionally knock each other out of the way to get ahead. They dress campy, a ton of makeup and sassy pantyhose, and they use pseudonyms. I can't say Amanda's over the radio, but Robin goes by Switchblady. Sydney Harbaugh goes by Liz Dexic.
Hopefully we get a new audience, because people still, we've been here 2 years and people still don't know that there's derby at Hagerstown.
There's about 20 derby girls here to see the movie tonight. Liz Dexic heads to the box office. She's got a reflective roller skate the size of an apple hanging around her neck.
Can I use a card? Okay, can I get a ticket for Whip It?
The theater feels like it's chock full of Mason-Dixon Vixens, including Captain Fanny Harmher.
I do feel bad for the other people that just came to watch the movie. We've kind of taken over, and I really don't think they're going to get any peace. Well, they'll see what roller derby's really about.
Not sure if the team is winning any hearts and minds here. Polly G. Gamey's throwing popcorn at Liz Dexter.
No necking!
And even after it starts, Psychosis and Fanny Harmher can't stop themselves from debating the film's accuracy.
Well, you have to boil the mouthguard and fit it around your teeth so you couldn't, like, somebody
that's
couldn't give
true,
you.
That's because Stun Hunt forgot her mouthguard one time and she wore mine.
Oh, that's gross.
By day, Fanny Harmher is Ms. Leatherman, a first-grade teacher. Psychosis is Amber Morey, a stay-at-home mom with three kids. But they cheer like a class of eighth graders at the end. They totally love the movie. Really, they love everything that has to do with roller derby. And for psychosis, it's been transformative.
I was a very shy person, just very, you know, I've been home for 13 years with my kids. I have a 13-year-old son, so I was real sheltered and real at home, and I found this group of girls, and I always had the voice down in me. It just was brought out. And hallelujah for that, because, you know, it's time. It's time.
It's time for roller derby to take off in Hagerstown. Psychosis thinks there'll be a whippet bump at the team's next home bout on November 8th.